front of a pregnant woman. Sometimes you can't cough, snore, or breathe around a pregnant woman. Most importantly, you can't complain around a pregnant woman. I know that because I've lived with one for 8 years. Every one of the man's problems is insignificant on a relative basis. I'm just so tired. Oh, really? I'm growing a human being. I just have a lot of work to do. Oh, really? I have to push a baby with your head size out of my body. I'm going to just go stand in the corner for the next 9 months. Witnessing Jeannie give birth to 5 healthy babies has taught me many things, but mostly that I could never have a baby. Granted, I don't have a uterus, but even if I did have a uterus, I don't think I could do any of it. If men had the babies, our species would be long extinct. That's why females always have the babies. Except in the seahorse world. Supposedly, the male seahorse has the baby. I don't understand why they didn't just call that the female seahorse. It was probably some stubborn scientist's fault.
And that one there is the male seahorse.
Bill, sorry to interrupt, but that seahorse is having a baby.
Oh. The male seahorse has the baby. You're fired.
Pregnancy is an incredible sacrifice. I used to think morning sickness should be used to describe us people sick of getting up in the morning, but morning sickness is no joke. It's incredible what a woman's body goes through when she's growing a baby. I can barely digest cheese. And Jeannie has endured 5 full-term pregnancies. Suddenly, simple actions like eating, sleeping, peeing, and tying shoes become Olympic hurdles. I only remember Jeannie complaining once or twice. I'm tired. I'm hungry. I'm cold. Let me back inside. Being a supportive spouse, I would explain that I'd let her back in the house once she moved those cinder blocks. A deal is a deal. During pregnancy, the dominant hormone is progesterone, which is a Latin term for shut up and get away from me, you horrible man who ruined my life. By the way, here's a piece of advice for you soon-to-be fathers out there. Pregnant women do not like to be called bitches at all. You're welcome. I'm jealous of pregnant women. When pregnant women have cravings, it's adorable. And when they put on 20 or 30 pounds in 9 months, it's healthy. Yet when I have cravings and put on 30 pounds, I'm considered a fat tub of turds. I'm not sure, but I believe this is sexism. Everyone wants to rub a pregnant woman's belly, but when I ask people to rub my belly, I get kicked out of Dave and Buster's. It's just not fair. I put on more weight than Jeannie during each of her pregnancies. I justify it by thinking, well, just another thing I'm better at than she is. Oh my God, you're pregnant. Pregnancy is an abstract concept to grasp. You see the baby bump, and people are congratulating you and your wife. But you really don't know what's going on in there until you see that 3D ultrasound. Very early on, you can see a fully formed baby who is kicking and sucking its thumb. I remember being shocked when I first saw my son on a 12-week ultrasound. He already had more hair than I did. It can be confusing deciphering our society's view towards pregnancy. Culturally, we cherish a pregnant woman. We acknowledge the sacrifice. People will give up their seats on buses. We say congratulations when we see a pregnant woman. But there is usually an element of scandal associated with it. Pregnant women are either too young or too old, or it's too soon after another pregnancy, or she's going to get in trouble at work. She's too poor, too rich, too successful, too skinny, too fat, too crazy, too busy, too single, too married, too too. Oh my God, your sister is pregnant? She was just a kid 20 years ago. Why are we always surprised to find out someone is pregnant? Really, getting pregnant is the most amazing, unamazing thing ever. Of course, conception is miraculous, but it is how we all got here. My mom got pregnant, your mom got pregnant, everyone's mom got pregnant. Yet still we're shocked it could happen to any other woman. We are shocked when a teenager gets pregnant. We're shocked when a 50-year-old gets pregnant. But really, that's how it's been happening forever. As human beings, we end up acting like we are the first generation on the planet to deal with pregnancy. We are most shocked when really attractive, successful women get pregnant. It's unbelievable. Did you hear? Beyoncé got pregnant. It's almost as if she's a human being. There's always this unspoken commentary of, why would she do that to her career? How many Grammy Awards would Beyoncé need to win before it would be time for her to have a baby? I think there may be a belief mothers are no longer sexy or somehow an exception if they are sexy. The concept of a MILF is rather insulting if it's based on the belief that having a baby makes you unattractive. So therefore, the rare mother who is attractive needs her own special term. Actually, MILF is pretty insulting anyway. Sorry I brought it up, ladies. I think Jeannie gets sexier with every baby she has. And I'm not just saying that because she will most likely be listening to this book. Hi, Jeannie. Sorry I destroyed the microwave last night again. Can you clean it up? Think about it, though. When you see a gorgeous woman, and then you find out she has a bunch of kids, doesn't it make her like 100 times hotter? It's not just celebrity moms. We are surprised that any beautiful, successful woman would want to have a baby. Why would she want to do that? I don't know. Why would your mom want to have you? As if without the ticking of some socially imposed biological clock, no woman would voluntarily choose to get pregnant. People treat having a kid as somehow retiring from success, quitting. Have you seen a baby? They're pretty cute. Loving them is pretty easy. Smiling babies should actually be categorized by the pharmaceutical industry as a powerful antidepressant. Being happy is really the definition of success, isn't it? Witchcraft. Jeannie has had all our babies at home in our apartment. Hey, we've got the room, right? If you are unfamiliar with home birth, like I was, you probably think of it as taking 100 years of advancement in the field of obstetrics and just throwing that away. You just wing it. Well, that's what I thought, too. During the birth of our first child, I remember thinking, hey, I can't program a DVR, but I'm here to help. Now, where would you like me to stand terrified? That will be my contribution. At times, it seems like we elected to have our babies at home, mostly to make other people feel uncomfortable. I quickly learned that people don't want to hear about home births. Their first reaction always seems to be, oh, you had your baby at home. Yeah, we were going to do that too, but we wanted our baby to live. There's usually an assumption of irresponsibility or laziness. You didn't want to go to the hospital? I sometimes explain that the hospital was like 20 blocks away and that I didn't feel like putting on pants. Weren't you worried that something would go wrong? Don't most people worry at the hospital? Hospitals should just be renamed houses of worry. Actually, we had our babies at home, not in a Waffle House. At home, isn't that a little too comfortable? Why didn't you just have the baby in the germ-infested building where sick people congregate? Didn't your wife want to give birth in a gown someone died in yesterday? Believe me, I get the concern. Home birth sounds crazy. It is a wild experience. I remember at our last home birth, there was so much screaming at one point, I actually woke up. I thought someone had scored a touchdown or something. When I saw my wife was just having another baby, I asked her to keep it down and went back to sleep. It may come as no surprise that home birth was Jeannie's idea. I'm not really even a fan of cooking at home. At all our home births, I was Jeannie's birth coach, which is a generous title for that guy in the way. In reality, I would assist by performing counterpressure and get yelled at for doing it wrong. Don't worry, it wasn't just Jeannie and me, there was a midwife there, which means we believe in witchcraft. Actually, a midwife is a certified medical practitioner. She is not your extra wife and will not make you breakfast. I learned this the hard way. Most midwives are actually former labor and delivery nurses, which means they have more experience with the whole labor from beginning to end than some doctors do. With healthy labors, doctors come in the bottom of the ninth and catch the ball for the winning last out, whereas midwives have been in for the whole game. Jeannie's first home birth was not even originally planned to be a home birth. The birth was supposed to be natural, without drugs, in a birthing center at the hospital. It was to be at Bellevue Hospital, which I've always thought of as a mental hospital. Given how crazy Jeannie and I are, I thought it was only appropriate that she give birth in a hospital that was famous for its mental ward. During the first and second trimesters of her pregnancy, I remember nodding along to Jeannie's excited tutorial as she explained all she had learned about natural childbirth, versus C-section, the Bradley method, and home birth. Like most of you listening to this, I would end every discussion with, well, obviously we're not having the baby in our apartment, right? Jeannie would assure me no, and then I would go back to whatever I was eating. Our birth plan was to wait until Jeannie was far enough into labor that she could have the baby naturally at the hospital in a birthing center without medical intervention or drugs. Great. As the pregnancy got into its third trimester, Jeannie became more and more enamored with home birth. She began talking about having our next baby at home. Great, whatever. I went back to whatever I was eating. When she finally went into labor with Mari, we still were planning on going to Bellevue. The midwife came over, monitored the baby, and Jeannie walked around the apartment, distressing about eventually going to the hospital. By this time, I was aware that home birth was a safe alternative, but I still expected to be heading to the hospital at any moment. We had a bag packed and everything. The baby was in the right position, healthy, with a strong heartbeat, and Jeannie just needed regular contractions to push the baby out. Then I remember Jeannie turning to me and announcing she wanted to have the baby at home. She was way too uncomfortable to go anywhere. Great. I stopped eating. I didn't know what to do. The midwife had all the necessary medical items for a home birth with her and told me to warm some towels and cover the things that we didn't want blood on. Okay, blood on? I'd never attended a birth, let alone a home birth, so I went to work. When the midwife and Jeannie eventually returned from the bathroom to the living room, they started laughing. Well, Jeannie was making pain noises, but there were some laughter-like sounds in her pain noises. I had put a shower curtain on the floor, covered the couches, and our new flat-screen TV with garbage bags. The midwife asked, "What do you think is going to happen in here? I never said I was smart." The labor was long and painful for Jeannie, but she did it. Mari arrived as we were kneeling on the living room floor. The baby was perfect and healthy, and we were at home. I was so impressed by the midwife. She was incredibly skillful and professional, but at the same time peaceful and respectful during the process. We all celebrated with champagne, and Jeannie and I got to sleep in our own bed. We were convinced. If we were going to have more babies, and the pregnancies were normal, we would have babies at home. For our next baby, Jack, we planned a water birth. At the time, we did not understand that what you plan for a birth and what actually happens are not always synonymous. Jeannie labored in the tub, but Jack arrived in her arms on the way to the bedroom as the water was being refilled. I tried to explain to the newborn that he did it all wrong, but he really didn't seem to care and just fell asleep. Katie, Michael, and Patrick were much better listeners. They all arrived under the water in the tub and were greeted by their brothers and sisters shortly thereafter. Jeannie recovered quickly after the birth, so I didn't feel bad about asking her to hurry up and clean the mess. Whenever people tell me, "You go on stage and make people laugh, you must be brave," I always think of Jeannie. She really is amazing. So are midwives. If I ever give birth myself, I'm definitely going midwife. I'm not anti-doctor. I think there is way too much pressure on doctors these days to be godlike saviors, and as a result, there is much arrogance in the medical community. Doctors always have the attitude of, "Look, we are scientists. We figured out the human body. Trust us." Yet whenever I go for a checkup, they're always like, "It's either a freckle or we have to amputate your head. That'll be $5,000. I think most people's apprehension about home birth is the absence of a doctor. I mean, could you imagine if there was no doctor at Jesus' birth? That could have changed the course of history. Newborn Land. I'm not surprised how much I love my children. I'm relieved. Shortly after I found out Jeannie was pregnant for the first time, I was worried. Would I be able to provide the unconditional love of a parent? I always found those Ann Getty's baby flower photos annoying. And it kind of puts me in a good mood to see a teenager fall off a skateboard. How could someone like me ever hope to be a good parent? Even I knew my "oh, what a cute baby" act was not very believable. What if I saw my baby and was like, "Yuck"? If you are having these feelings too, don't worry. It just means you're a horrible person. The good news is when your baby is born, something happens. I can't explain it. You just love your baby, unconditionally. Even if you didn't get the baby thing before, when you experience your own, you immediately fall in love and feel like you could kill or die for that baby. I was born with a heart that was two sizes too small, but when I saw my baby, it was like the Grinch discovering the true meaning of Christmas. The newborn stage is a special time. It's really a sacred time, when nobody expects you to do anything except enjoy your new bundle of joy. This sacred time lasts roughly 20 minutes, and then you become the publicity agent for the mother and the baby. The masses of family and friends want to be assured the mother is okay and get information on the baby. For some reason, it's really important for the people to know how much the baby weighs. This always baffled me. How much does she weigh? That's rude. She's not even a day old, and people seem to be obsessed with my daughter's weight. She was 9 pounds, but I remember telling friends she's 8 pounds, 16 ounces, because it sounded thinner. Either way, she carried the weight very well, but we put her on the Atkins diet anyway. Of course, there is nothing anyone can do with the information about your newborn's weight. No matter what the weight is, they say the same thing. Ooh, big baby. I don't have to explain that newborn babies are an enormous amount of work. When we had Mari, it was exhausting watching Jeannie do it all. With each newborn, I was shocked at how much work there was. The infant just lies there, sleeping, crying, or cooing, not even offering to help. I always think, great, we got another lazy one. Newborns are lazy. You even have to help a newborn burp. Of course, then you have to try to stop them from burping for the next 18 years. But babies are worth it. It's amazing the power a baby has over a parent. They are so cute, even though they are ridiculously out of shape. I mean, I'm out of shape, but a baby, please. They have zero muscle tone. They can barely hold their heads up. It's embarrassing, really. Still, they must have some kind of strange magic, because there is nothing that exists in the universe that can be as difficult, make you lose as much sleep, smell as bad, and still be so loved. Once on the road, I drove past a serious skunk smell, and my only thought was, I miss my baby. Babies are adorable, but they kind of have to be, because they are rude. Wah! That's not polite. Wah, wah. I don't speak baby, but I'm guessing there is no please in that statement. Babies are the worst roommates. They're unemployed. They don't pay rent. They keep insane hours. Their hygiene is horrible. If you had a roommate that did any of the things babies do, you'd ask them to move out. Do you remember what happened last night? Today you're all smiles, but last night you were hitting the bottle pretty hard. Then you started screaming and you threw up on me. Then you passed out and wet yourself. I went in the other room to get you some dry clothes. I came back. You're all over my wife's breasts, right in front of me, her husband. Dude, you gotta move out. It's strange for a father when a mother breastfeeds. The baby always seems to look right at the dad like, what are you gonna do about it? Nothing. You're pathetic. Why don't you take a picture, weirdo? When I complain about this to Jeannie, she thinks I'm being crazy. But I don't trust newborn babies. We really don't know them. We don't know what they've been doing in utero for 9 months. They could be a terrorist, a communist, or even worse, a book agent. I think it's also weird how many babies go for the skinhead look. Don't take fashion advice from a baby. I tried to do the onesie thing last summer, and I'm not sure, but I think people were laughing at me. Anyone who has ever been a parent of a newborn baby knows that baby clothes are just plain stupid. I mean, they are cute for pictures, but after that, just take those stupid clothes off and wrap your baby in a towel. How much time and money would we save if we just wrap them in towels? For those of you less concerned with the environment, paper towels would be even better. Unfortunately, you get tons of baby clothes as gifts. That is what people want to get you. Baby clothes are like torture for both the baby and the parent. Getting babies dressed up in these little clothes is a major struggle. The baby is screaming, and you are in a panic, so you are always putting their wrong leg in the armhole and the head through the leg hole. All the while, your baby is turning red and wailing like, why are you doing this to me? And you're just apologizing over and over again, like, shh, I'm sorry. We're almost done. Shh. Grandma gave you this, and she wants to see you in it. Shh. Oops, it's on backwards. I'm sorry. Let me start over. Then, when you finally get the clothes on, they usually throw up on them, or it's immediately time for a diaper change, and you have to start all over again. Of course, what people should be giving newborns are diapers. Just diapers and coupons for free diapers. Newborns go through like a case of those a week. Giving a newborn clothes just makes no sense at all. Newborns can't dress themselves, and from what I've experienced, they never go out. Either that, or we've had some really homebody newborns. I've been around 5 newborns, and not one of them has asked, "Tonight, I'm meeting some friends for sushi. Can you help pick out an outfit?" Fashion's night out is not a big thing for babies. And the snaps and buttons never end. I always feel like I'm trying to put a duvet on a moving comforter. As I snap baby clothes, I can hear the employees at the baby clothing factory laughing at me. "No, no, put 20 more snaps on, Bob. Now put on a snap that doesn't have a matching snap. Good one, Bob." I'm sure there's someone named Bob working at the baby clothing factory. Well, at one point there probably was. Instead of figuring out a way for baby clothes to have something less stupid than snaps, the geniuses named Bob at the baby clothing factories were busy designing something even more stupid. Baby versions of adult shoes. My brother-in-law Patrick bought our then 3-month-old Jack tiny Timberland hiking boots. Our baby couldn't walk, let alone hike. Patrick explained that the boots would be cute. Cute, yes, but only because they're ironic. A baby wearing construction worker boots that weigh more than he does, really, it's mean. It's like giving a blind person a microscope. "Look at him fumble with that. Isn't that adorable? I gotta get a picture. He's holding it upside down." Newborns always get gifts from your friends and family. New dads don't. I know, it sounds unfair to me, too. What did the newborns do? Nothing, right? The people giving the gifts don't even know what the newborns would want. It's usually the first time the person is meeting the baby. How could they know the baby's tastes? Usually they're not even gifts they can use. Once someone got our newborn son a book. A book! Hello, the baby doesn't even speak English. How do you expect them to read it? Then I realized it was one of those cool touchy-feely books with barely any words, like one page is felt, then there's a crinkly page, then a silk one. Anyway, I stuck that book in my desk drawer for me to read later. That book was way too nice to waste on a baby. Please, just get them diapers. Before I had kids, I was afraid of diapers. Now I'm a diaper expert. At times, I feel like I'm a diapering professional. I can change a diaper standing, squirming, screaming, on an airplane, and even in the dark. And I can change a baby's diaper, too. Changing a diaper in the middle of the night is a unique skill. It's like the Hurt Locker, but much more dangerous. And you don't have the 2 other guys on the elite squad to help you out. It's just you, the baby, and the wet diaper in complete darkness. Around 4 a.m., you'll hear the half-asleep cry from the baby. Allow me to take a moment to describe what a half-asleep baby is. Sleeping babies will often cry due to discomfort of some sort. If you can find a way to diffuse the problem immediately, they will return to a fully sleeping state. If you miss this opportunity to intervene, even by seconds, the results can be devastating to an entire household. Back to 4 a.m. The cry continues. Is it hunger or diaper? Always think in contingency. I'll start warming a bottle in a coffee cup of microwaved water. You shall see how this will come in handy later on. We must react quickly and with purpose to the baby's cries. If you don't, the consequences are simple. You'll be up for 3 hours with a tired, cranky baby. Like disarming a bomb, everything must be done in a stealth manner that will not fully wake the baby. You have to get in and out. An experienced pro like myself will grab the aforementioned warm bottle. See, I told you it would come back. A new diaper, some wipes from the wipe warmer, and one of those scented blue diaper bags that are not only impossible to open, but make as much noise as microwaving popcorn. You have to use a scented bag, or in the morning your house will smell like a subway station on New Year's Day. With the Mission Impossible theme song playing in my head, I position a bottle in the baby's mouth, carefully propping it with a pillow while I quickly undo 45 snaps on the sleeper. I will have exactly 20 seconds to complete my task. I carefully peel back the adhesive tape on the sides of the old diaper. The cries grow louder as the bottle falls out of position, and louder still as the cold air hits the open diaper area. Will I make it? The once warm wipes feel cold to the touch. But it's too late to back down. The ice-cold wipe further startles the screaming yet somehow still sleeping baby. Then the diaper is on, tape fastened, and the bottle is repositioned. The hardest part is over, disaster averted, but I'm not out of the woods yet. I commence re-snapping the sleeper in complete darkness. I probably skipped a few, but who cares? The baby is silent. I raise the crib rail and tiptoe out of the room of victor, a hero. I stub my toe on the bouncy chair, but muffle my yelp of pain. As I close the door, I hear only the drinking of the bottle, and then suddenly, wah! The diaper is wet again. Mission Impossible 2. Dogfight. Every year after Jeannie has her annual baby, I receive congratulations from friends and family. There's always one person who says, "Oh, you just had a baby. Yeah, we just got a puppy." What? In no other situation could you compare a human to an animal, and people would actually be okay with it. You could never say, "Oh, you just got married. Yeah, I used to have a pig. Does your new wife like to roll around in the mud, too? My pig loved that." Of course, the dog and baby comparison is nothing new. Dog owners are sincere and mean no insult. Their dog is their baby. But of course, a dog is not a baby. It's a dog. I also understand some people prefer dogs to babies. We are raising our children in New York City, which is not the most popular place to have children. If you hear someone cooing, "Oh, how cute," on the street in NYC, you better look down, because they are going to be referring to a dog. It's a good thing babies have no idea how often they are compared to dogs. I would think that would be pretty insulting to the babies. Let me be clear. I love all animals. I love to pet them. I love to eat them. I'm an all-around animal lover. But besides the drooling and whimpering, your dog is not that similar to a baby. Take the smells, for instance. Babies are the two extremes on the spectrum of smell. They either smell like heaven filled with lollipops or a microwave cesspool. The cleanest of clean dogs still smells like a dog. Allow me to list a few other differences. 1. Dogs come when you call their name. 2. The absence of birth control does not lead to pet ownership. 3. You don't have to worry about your dog ever becoming addicted to meth. 4. You do not have to save so your dog can go to college and then find out after they graduate they want to be an actor. 5. If someone is pushing a baby in a stroller, they are probably a parent or a caregiver. If someone is pushing a dog in a stroller, they are probably insane. In some ways, having a kid is easier than having a dog. When you go on vacation, you don't have to kennel your kids. Although a kid kennel is an intriguing new business idea, you're welcome. You can stay in any hotel with your kids, and you don't have to hide them when room service comes. I mean, sometimes I do, but that's only because I'm hiding my fries from my kids. With children, you can look forward to a time when they eventually learn to feed and bathe themselves. If you give a dog a bar of soap and put it in the bathroom, it's going to eat the bar of soap. Dogs and kids are both affectionate, but dogs always have dog breath, or soapy dog breath. Occasionally, a dog will be presented as some training method for having a baby. "My girlfriend and I got a dog. We're going to see if we can handle that before we have kids." This is a little like testing the waters of being a vegetarian by having lettuce on your burger. Okay, maybe that metaphor doesn't make sense, but neither does using a dog as a training method for having a baby. Circumcision. When you have a boy, you have to deal with the circumcision question. If you are eating a hot dog while listening to this, my apologies. Most men cringe when they hear the word circumcision. Can you talk about something else, like prison rape? Circumcision's just a scary word. I looked up circumcision in the dictionary, and it just said, "Ow," from the Latin for "ow." Everyone will admit circumcision is crazy. The Germans flirted with the idea of making it illegal to circumcise your son. This is impressive, given Germans don't really have a great record on the human rights front. Obviously, circumcision began as a religious tradition. I don't know how they came up with the idea of circumcision, really. I guess there was a meeting at some point. "All right, how should we honor God?" "I'd say we don't eat pork." "I don't know. I like bacon." "Anyone got anything else?" "What if we cut off part of our penis?"
Okay, no pork. We'll go no pork, and I want that man removed from this building.
Jeannie told me that in the Bible, Abraham circumcised himself. Wow, I don't even like clipping my nails. Apparently God told Abraham to do it. I would have loved to have overheard that conversation.
Abraham?
Oh, hey, God.
I need you to do something for me.
Well, sure, you're gone. Whatever you want.
I need you to circumcise yourself.
I think we have a bad connection here. You're breaking up. Can you send me an email? When you think about it, God's request in the Old Testament took a dramatic leap in difficulty. Don't eat that apple. Build a boat. Then out of nowhere, cut off part of your penis. I imagine Abraham was like, how about I build two boats and no more bananas? We have to assume Abraham went through with God's request. I'm not sure how Abraham hid this adjustment from his wife. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he was getting out of the shower and his wife was brushing her teeth. What the hell have you done?
Honey, I can explain. God told me to do it.
What? If God told you to jump off a bridge, what if God told you to sacrifice our firstborn son?
Actually, I have to talk to you about that one.
Circumcision is a tough decision for any parent. Do you put your newborn son through an enormous amount of unnecessary pain, or do you have a kid with an ugly penis? Unfortunately, Jeannie left the decision up to me. I decided to go through with it, but only because each of my sons requested it. Of course, they didn't request it. I couldn't even discuss the decision with them, but I'm pretty sure they wouldn't want someone clipping off part of their penis. I finally made the decision to do it for a number of reasons, one of which was fear. A friend recently had to circumcise their 1-year-old because of repeated infections. Still enjoying that hot dog? Ultimately, I wanted my sons to be like their dad, cut off from a little bit of their manhood. The only thing worse than deciding to have your son circumcised has to be witnessing your son getting circumcised. I've had to watch my 3 sons go through this, and it haunts me to this day. I've blocked out most of it, but I'll never forget my first time. Well, my first son's first time. Well, hopefully Jack's only time. I remember everything vividly up until the point when I blocked everything out. Since we elected to do a home birth, we didn't have the option of a quick circumcision after the birth, as in a hospital. We had to arrange a circumcision at home in our tiny apartment. Jeannie found a highly recommended Moyle, Dr. Emily Blake, to do the procedure. Dr. Emily is a Moyle, a doctor, and a rabbi. Talk about an overachiever. I was relieved to know that my son's sonness was in good hands. Then Jeannie notified me that she was going to invite some people to the ceremony. What? I didn't really want people to know we were even doing this to our precious newborn son, let alone throwing a party to announce it. I didn't even know we were Jewish. There were a dozen guests, including my sister's girlfriend, a priest, and our Moyle/rabbi/doctor attending the ceremony. We literally had the beginning of a classic joke. A priest, a rabbi, and a lesbian walk into a circumcision. As I mentioned before, I completely blocked out most of what happened that night, as I did with the other nights my sons were circumcised. Of course, if they ever question why they were circumcised, I'll do the manly thing and blame it on their mother. The invasion. Nobody likes being a new kid. It's uncomfortable and strange. People are mean and call you dog breath. Well, maybe that was just me when I was the new kid in 5th grade. When a newborn baby arrives, he or she is the new kid. In a family with young children, it's not just uncomfortable and strange for the new kid. It's uncomfortable and strange for everyone. Sure, the new addition to the family is always celebrated and loved completely, but he or she brings change to the family unit. At the time of birth, suddenly there's another person in the room, or in the case of a home birth, in your bathtub. It's really a special time. While this event is magical and mystical for adults, for young children it can be overwhelming and confusing. A 3-year-old can witness their mother's belly getting larger, and you can read them every book about a new sibling coming, but they are still surprised when the baby actually arrives. For our 1-year-old Michael, the arrival of his younger brother Patrick was the shock of a lifetime and wildly confusing. As sweet and kind as Michael is, he still couldn't understand this small stranger who somehow just arrived and was stealing some of his thunder. He was gentle and kissed the baby's head the way we had taught him to do with a doll before the birth, but when he looked to us for approval, there was some desperation in his big blue eyes. It was like the reaction of an aging chorus girl when the 18-year-old ingenue joins the show. Welcome aboard. I hope you don't get injured. Michael wasn't alone. All our children acted like they had had a couple Red Bulls after a breakup. Sleepless and clingy became their M.O. Sibling jealousy is always an issue, even if you have one kid dealing with the arrival of a new baby. I don't think any husband or wife would be thrilled if their spouse suddenly brought home another partner. Bob, this is Frank. Frank will also be my husband. When you have four kids and a new kid shows up, the results are a little more dramatic. I guess only polygamous sister wives could identify. Jeannie and I attempt to make the transition as easy as possible on the kids. I try to be a compassionate dad. I always sit the other children down and explain that the new baby does not mean we love them any less, but we will have to let one of them go. I'm kidding, of course. There is nothing that can be said to a child to alleviate the stress of a new arrival. It can only be solved by one-on-one time and lots of cuddles. This is perfect because you have all the free time in the world when dealing with a newborn. When newborns are not sleeping, they need constant attention. I think our youngest, Patrick, slept for a total of 34 seconds during his first 3 weeks. What can we say to the other kids? Okay, the bad news is we've hired someone to do your job, but the good news is you've been promoted to former cutest kid. Congratulations. The kids are not thrilled. With a new baby, it always feels like Jeannie and I are going through parental performance reviews. The other kids don't act out toward the baby. They act out toward us. It's not the baby's fault he's here. It's our fault. They don't know how we did it, but they know we did it. Suddenly, our 3-year-old starts sucking her thumb with vengeance, looking at us like, Mom didn't nurse me long enough. Now I will ruin my teeth, so you will pay thousands of dollars in dental work. The first couple weeks of a new arrival when you have four kids are like pledging a fraternity, except the parents are the ones being hazed. To make matters worse, there's no alcohol served during this process. What about the new kid, Patrick? How did he adjust? He wasn't thrilled. Newborns don't smile, and they always give me that look like, oh no, you're my dad? Patrick went from having his own room in his man cave womb to being thrust into the center of a madhouse. He seemed to look around at our apartment disgusted, as if to say, wow, and I thought my last place was crowded. I know how you feel, my friend. I know how you feel.
Eat the coleslaw!
Even when I was a little kid, I always saw motherhood as an awe-inspiring occupation. My mom was always mothering my siblings and me. It was a 24-hour-a-day position. Running errands, making dinner, picking us up, and yelling instructions from the other room.
Eat the coleslaw!
Would be bellowed from the kitchen as we ate dinner. How did she know we weren't eating the coleslaw? Did moms have x-ray vision? We would giggle at crazy old mom, but we knew that without her we were lost. All moms seemed simultaneously tireless and on the brink of exhaustion. Once when I was 10, I slept over at a friend's house. For fun, my friend and I decided that we would try to stay up all night. Around 2 in the morning, we thought we heard a monster. After drumming up the courage to investigate, we crept down to the basement to discover my friend's mom doing laundry in a neck brace. I remember thinking, maybe moms don't sleep. Maybe moms are indestructible. Moms always seem to be in a state of constant mothering. Conversely, I remember thinking all dads seemed like they were just returning from playing golf or about to leave to play golf. Maybe that was just the shirts men wore in those days. Now, as a father, I have a deeper appreciation for mothers. It's not just the endless tasks and limited sleep. Motherhood is filled with executive decisions, and with each decision comes possible conflict with kids, husbands, and other mom friends. With these other mom friends, there are so many opportunities for major disagreements and awkwardness. Let's say that a woman starts with 20 friends when she finds out she's pregnant. There is going to be awkwardness with, let's say, 6 of these friends because they have no interest in babies or are jealous she's pregnant. Then 4 won't agree with how she behaves during the pregnancy. She's too uptight, too casual, not available enough as a friend. We are down to 10 friends. Then there are the decisions of how the baby will be delivered, breastfeeding, circumcision, blanket or no blanket in the crib, and whether or when to return to work after the birth. These topics turn out to be more divisive than opinions about politics and religion. After a couple of kids, there might be one good friend left, and that friend is never available because she has too many kids herself. I'm amazed mothers have anyone to talk to. When a man finds out he's going to be a father, it barely covers more than 20 seconds of a conversation with his male friends.
Heard you two are expecting. Who do you think is the best quarterback in the fourth quarter?
Mothers need to talk, and fathers need to escape. I think this is why women of my mother's generation would go to ladies' luncheons. I remember as a teenager twice a year my mother announcing, "Me and the ladies are going out to lunch." She would return 8 hours later, well, let's say not sober.
"Your father's a jerk. Get me a gyro."
I suppose parenting wouldn't feel so overwhelming if Jeannie didn't make mothering look so easy. At times, I think she has more than two arms. She is an amazing partner and wife. The only thing Jeannie is missing is her own wife, a wife exactly like her. If you think this sounds sexist, you don't know Jeannie. Since I am not handy, Jeannie tends to do a lot of the inevitable household repairs that result from having five children who break everything. Recently, I was assembling a kid's scooter and futilely trying to shove the top piece in. "Jeannie, do we have a hammer?" "Yeah, we have like three hammers." "Where are they?" "In the toolbox." "We have a toolbox?" There is one exception to Jeannie's superhumanness. As capable, organized, and amazing as Jeannie is at almost everything, it is baffling how many times a day she loses her phone. "Where's my phone? Didn't you just find it?" "Yes, but then I put it down somewhere. Can you call it?" "Ring. It's in your hand." Jeannie calls this mommy brain. But rather than condemning mothers as ditzy scatterbrains, I think it's just a matter of shifting priorities and focusing on the most important issues, like taking care of me. Jeannie is the mother of five children, six if you include me, and my invaluable writing partner. I don't mean partner symbolically like, "Oh, here's what the client's wife thinks." She is the partner. This is very rare in stand-up, so people are surprised that she is executive producing my theater shows while being the mother of five kids. Shouldn't your wife be home fat and miserable? Jeannie comes from a family of nine kids, and she and her mother have really bonded over the trials and tribulations of being in the awe-inspiring position of mother. There is certain language that only mothers can understand. They talk all the time on the phone, usually having the same five-minute conversation over and over again for like 8 hours. When they aren't talking, I assume it's because Jeannie's lost her phone. Toddlerhood is one of my favorite periods of childhood development, not just because you can finally enter them in beauty pageants. Don't worry, they get used to the fake teeth. Toddler is a term used to describe children ages 1 to 3. Babies and toddlers are mostly what I've been exposed to at this point. I'm hoping parenting just gets much easier after this. It does, right? I know this is an audiobook, and I can't hear you, but I'm going to take your silence as a yes. I used to wonder why I had hair on my legs, but now I know it's for my toddler sons and daughters to pull themselves up off the ground with as I scream in pain. Based on my experience, a baby will start walking at around 11 months, I think. Oh, geez, I don't remember. I just know they start walking before they ride a bike and start smoking. All healthy babies eventually walk, but we treat those first steps like someone has just risen out of a wheelchair at a healing revival. "He's walking! It's a miracle!" I guess walking is sort of impressive after 10 months of just lying around. Actually, they don't immediately walk or even toddle. They cruise or hold themselves up with furniture in search of the hardest and sharpest surface to bang their head on. When they finally let go and take a few steps, it's more like a stumble or a stagger, like they are a drunken old man or a zombie extra from The Walking Dead. What amazes me is that once they actually learn to walk, they're immediately trying to get away. You just say, "Time for a bath," and they scoot away like they have an escape car outside. I don't know where they think they're going. They can't even reach the doorknob. I'm always like, "What are you doing? You only know us. Think it through." They've only been on the planet for 12 months, and they can't really go stay with a friend or check into a motel. But that doesn't stop them. It doesn't matter if they don't have a plan. They are just trying to leave. Once your baby starts to walk, you'll realize why cribs are designed like prisons from the early 1900s. This is clearly because toddlers are a danger to themselves. The main responsibility for a parent of a toddler is to stop them from accidentally hurting or killing themselves. They are super clumsy. If you don't believe me, watch a 2-year-old girl attempt to walk upstairs in a long dress. It looks like a Carol Burnett sketch. Also, toddler judgment is horrible. They don't have any. Put a 12-month-old on a bed and they will immediately try to crawl off headfirst like a lemming on a mindless migration mission. But the toddler mission is never mindless. They have two goals, find poison and find something to destroy. Toddlers love toilet paper. I mean, I love toilet paper, too. Who doesn't? Even the most devout conservationists can't live without their toilet paper. Reuse! Recycle! Wait, what? We're out of toilet paper? Chop down that forest! Fast! But toddlers love toilet paper for all the wrong reasons. They have no idea what it is for or how to use it. But they are passionate about a nice, big, fresh roll of toilet paper. They love to play with it, wear it, eat it, and especially unroll it. Leave a toddler alone in a bathroom for 5 seconds, and they somehow unroll 300 feet of toilet paper with supernatural speed. Then you walk in and bust them, and they look at you like, what? This stuff is obviously for me, right? It's right at my eye level. It's the most fun thing in the house. All the geniuses at the Fisher-Price Laboratories have yet to develop something as fun for a toddler as a 99-cent roll of toilet paper. Unfortunately for me, whenever this unrolling happens, it's always the last roll in the house. Have you ever tried to re-roll an entire family-sized roll of toilet paper? I just leave it in a big undulating pile next to the toilet. I'm not going to throw it away. After all, it's still toilet paper. After toddlers make the evolutionary leap to baby erectus, you still end up pushing them in a stroller or carrying them most places if you'd like to reach your destination in the next decade. 15-month-old Michael loves to run around, yet he always wants me to carry him everywhere in my sling. He is huge, but I can hardly feel my back breaking when I walk around with Michael in the sling because of the attention that he draws from everyone we encounter. I call Michael a gateway baby. Even people who don't like babies or children melt around his sweetness and charm. Michael makes the crabbiest New Yorker smile. It's like I'm carrying the heaviest ventriloquist doll ever, but the routine is in gibberish. The interesting thing that happens when walking around with a baby strapped in front of you at adult eye level is the baby acts like he thinks he is the one walking around and you are just this weirdo strapped to his back. He starts to have conversations with adults that you encounter. When babies move away from just the mama, dada, baba sounds, they start to make sounds that could be words, but they are not. It's the seriousness with which they deliver their baby talk that is most entertaining. Michael's babble is delivered with the intensity and cadence of an Obama speech. People are compelled to respond in kind, but then Michael will just look at them like, that's not what I said at all, you moron. They make up for it when they turn two, and they just start talking. I mean talking all the time. It's as if all those things they wanted to say before just come jumbling out in a whirlwind of botched sentences. They can't pronounce anything. I want the... I want pa go down little fly eat apple. I'm like, come on, learn English. This is America, for God's sake. When Katie was 2, her English was so bad, I thought she might be Al-Qaeda. Some of this may have been because when I dressed her in a baby burqa, she looked kind of suspicious. Toddlers, for some reason, are always out of breath. They always sound like they've traveled by horseback for hours in order to deliver important news. Mommy, Mommy, Daddy, I need to tell you something. The news is so important, parental titles are unimportant. Daddy, Mommy, Daddy, I need to tell you. I'll chime in, yes, what is it? By that point, it will be apparent by the look on their face that they have completely forgotten what they even wanted to tell you. Can I have some juice? I mean, I wet my pants. Toddlers also love to tell you secrets, especially when you are wearing a white shirt and they've been eating chocolate. Everyone with a toddler has had that embarrassing moment when their kid will innocently yell a word in public that sounds like a really bad grown-up word. Once when 2-year-old Jack was playing swords in the park with another boy, he yelled, I'm going to hit you with my big stick. But his ST sounded more like a D. When Mari was two, I was in line at a crowded New York City grocery store, and I gave her a sippy cup of juice in a futile attempt to stop a meltdown. She bellowed at the top of her lungs, "I don't like Jews!" Thank God we live in New York City, and my family looks like Hitler's fantasy. Otherwise, that would have been pretty awkward. Jeannie has often described two-year-olds as the peak of cuteness. For some reason, everything a toddler says is adorable. Maybe it's the squeaky voice, maybe it's the made-up word, "Lasterday, I have paschetti," or "It's waning, can I bring my Uncle Brella?" They can talk, but they can't exactly follow logic. Dr. Harvey Karp, author of Happiest Toddler on the Block, calls it the caveman phase. I've never known a caveman, but I guess that makes sense. You can't really reason with a two-year-old. There's a lot of redirecting. Okay, instead of playing with the scissors, let's play with the ball. No, the hanging wine glasses are not a ball. Here, sit in the crib. Two-year-olds don't understand consequences. If you keep taking off your shoes in the cab, you will lose your shoes. Then you realize that's the point. They are trying to lose their shoes. That's why they are taking them off. The only consequences are for you. You will have to get them a new pair of shoes. Toddlers are adorable, but taking care of them doesn't really get any easier. Whoever came up with the term terrible twos must have felt very foolish after their kid turned three. Three-year-olds are just rude. They're still super cute, but now they are super cute, and they know it. They have gotten super smart, and they are not afraid to show it. It's like living with a child emperor. They act really entitled, bossy, and outspoken. They think the world revolves around them. I realize I'm describing myself, but somehow it works better for a three-year-old. Recently, I took my three-year-old Katie to the post office. As we were walking into the post office, a lady was walking out and stopped and smiled at little Katie. Katie took her thumb out of her mouth, looked the lady up and down, and said rudely, "What are you doing here?" This wouldn't have been so awkward, impolite, and funny if we knew the woman. We had never met or seen the woman before and didn't even know someone that looked remotely like the woman. In Katie's three-year-old world, this was an appropriate response to someone smiling at her. Katie still sucks her thumb at 3 years old. When she was two, everyone told us she would stop when she was three, but she kept on sucking her thumb. She is our third child and our first thumb sucker. Thumb sucking brings with it so many mixed emotions. There's that immediate fear that somehow we have failed her, that she is sucking her thumb because she doesn't get enough attention, or she wasn't nursed long enough. The reality is that she probably gets more attention and has better parents than our first two kids. Still, why the thumb? Am I worried that one day the thumb will be replaced by a crack pipe? Yes. Is that likely to happen? No. Thumb sucking is adorable in many ways. When Katie is angry, she uses the thumb sucking as an exclamation to emphasize her point. "I'm not taking a bath!" Insert thumb. When she has a stuffed up nose, it's incredibly comical to witness her attempt to suck her thumb and breathe at the same time. Of course, we've tried to stop her from sucking her thumb. We put some nasty goo on her thumb that she quickly got used to. She found a way to wipe it off and suck the thumb with twice the vigor. We tried telling her to stop sucking her thumb because she was a big kid now, but that only made it more special and prompted Katie to do a double-handed thumb suck. She holds a protective hand over the hand that has the thumb being sucked. With the double-handed thumb suck, she still only sucks on one thumb, but it looks like she's playing a tiny harmonica. She then proceeds to hum quietly to herself, as if to express her contentment with her thumb. We call this the thumb hum. At this point, I'm tempted to tell her to just start a toddler folk band. Now that we have a new baby, we have been advised by our pediatrician that she's only three, and to just let her suck her thumb so she can decide on her own when to quit. I wanted to put her on that thumb replacement patch, but Jeannie said we should wait until she's four. Everyone knows that a thumb sucker at age four is destined for prison. Toddlers are too cute to punish. They get off so easy. They can behave abominably, but what's the worst thing that can happen to them? A time out? Big deal. All I want to do is take a time out. I was recently watching a football game with Katie, and the announcer said, "The Jets have asked for a timeout." Katie saw the quarterback talking to the coach and asked, "Why did he get a timeout?" I thought for a second and then just said, "Because he didn't listen to his daddy." You don't have to worry about anything as a toddler. You don't get punished, everyone spoils you, and you have no job. You are treated like a king. I always say to my toddlers, enjoy it while it lasts. It's all downhill from here. The more I'm around children, the more I realize we are just giant toddlers. I think we are always unconsciously seeking to return to our early childhood. This is why we go to bars. Now that I have little children, going to a bar is a completely different observational experience. Many bars have a dartboard, a pool table, and various board games. There is music, dancing, and singing along to karaoke. There are Jell-O shots, for God's sake. Think of the last two times you had Jell-O, when you were three and when you were in that bar in Florida for spring break. Have you ever turned off the lights in a room filled with children? They immediately start screaming and acting insane. Is it merely a coincidence that lights are so low in bars? It's just a license for adults to misbehave. We go to bars so we can behave like children, toddlers, really. Have you been to a bar at 2 a.m? You might as well be picking up a kid at nursery school. It's the same experience. The behavior's the same. In both places, there's always some strange yelling for no reason at all. Woo-hoo! Woo! In both places, you go in the bathroom. It's obvious not everyone's potty trained. There's always someone crying, she was my best friend, but not anymore. Occasionally there's a fight. He was standing where I wanted to stand, so I punched him in the head. Nursery schools and bars at 2 a.m. are the only places where it's completely normal if someone just spontaneously throws up on the floor. And just like a toddler, the bar patron wakes up the next day not remembering or caring how they behaved. The evil within. Because I have children, I wash my hands. Of course, prior to children, I washed my hands. But now, I really wash my hands. Surgeons would be impressed. I don't want you to think I'm a germaphobe. I'm not at all. I'm just terrified of germs. It begins when you become a parent. You wash your hands to protect your precious newborn from germs. Then you wash your hands to protect yourself because little kids are walking petri dishes of different viruses. The only thing weaker than a toddler's handshake is their immune system. Toddlers are a virus's best friend. Viruses are usually spread by close contact and saliva. If you look up the definition of toddler, the first thing it should say is close contact and saliva. Toddlers are always the contagion. Our home becomes the CDC every winter. Jeannie is obsessed with having a clean house, but our kids bring home viruses like they're collecting them. The virus will go around the family taking its sweet time, taunting us. Oh, you think I'm done? Hardly. Just got my second wind. I'm taking another lap. You don't have to be a research scientist to figure out the origin of these virulent epidemics. They come from an experimental breeding ground specializing in the manufacture and mass dissemination of diseases known as the nursery school. Picture an incubator filled with little germ-infested creatures crawling all over one another, drooling and sneezing with their mouths open. Then draw them all into a tiny section of the incubator to use the potty, and instruct them all to wash their hands. Then have each one of them turn on the faucet with their well-traveled little fingers that each harbor a multitude of secrets. Run them for a half a second under icy water that serves as a refreshing drink to the busy bacteria who live and work on said fingers. Then make sure the faucet is turned off with the same fingers that turned it on, so any of the viruses and bacteria that may have taken a rest stop on the faucet handle can hop back on their tiny finger chariots to fulfill their manifest destiny. One last stop at the towel that everyone has wiped his or her hands on, and or noses on, and a whole new generation of infectious disease has been born. Did I mention incurable? There is nothing that you can do to prevent or cure these bugs that hit your family. Maybe with the first kid you will run to the doctor, but after that you know better. If you are dumb like me, you will be surprised to discover that antibiotics do not work on viruses. Turns out, bacteria and viruses are totally different. They're not even distant cousins. No wonder I didn't get into medical school. I mean, I didn't try to get into medical school, but if I did, I totally would have failed that question on the medical school test. Your kid's doctor will always give you the same advice about the virus. You have to let it take its course. In other words, there's nothing we can do. So you return home to your flimsy bomb shelter, totally vulnerable, just waiting for the next inevitable attack. I don't want to give the terrorists any ideas, but if I really wanted to cripple a city with biological warfare, my WMD of choice would have to be the toddler.